Right now, it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss assorted animal issues with our guest, Alec Baldwin. As always, we're kicking off the show first, though, with an animal tune. This is Booker T with his version of Tom Waits' Get Behind the Mule here on Talking Animals. Music from Booker T, with his version of Tom Waits' Get Behind the Mule, an animal tune of sorts, to Mule Kickoff, today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing from today's guest, Alec Baldwin, the Tony-nominated, Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning star of 30 Rock and frequent guest host of Saturday Night Live. Among the many other hats he wears, he is also a veteran animal rights advocate. The focus of the conversation we'll be hearing with Alec Baldwin in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for some animal news items and/or announcements. Starting with reminding you that our friends at Florida Voices for Animals are launching Tampa Bay Veg Fest, Tampa Bay area's first ever vegetarian vegan festival. It's going to be held Saturday, October 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Curtis Hickson Park in downtown Tampa. Can't say the price of the admission, but it couldn't be more reasonable, shall we say. And it's going to feature food from local restaurants, bands and artists, guest speakers, cat and dog adoptions, various vendors, tablers, exhibitors, and more. And to get more information, visit the website TampaBayVegFest.org. Also coming up is Cat Crusaders, Inc. has an all-volunteer cat rescue and is hosting this adoption event. Coming up this Saturday, September 11th, Second Chance for Love, a national adoption event, more kittens and puppies than we know what to do with. Yeah, it's exactly why they need to find some homes. So there's going to be free stuff, including food and litter with each adoption, and lots of parking. So it's going to take place at PetSmart in New Tampa, 6248 Commerce Palms Drive. Come order information. Actually taking place from 11 to 3, by the way, at TampaCatCrusaders.org. TampaCatCrusaders.org. And we have time maybe to hit one more. And this involves Florida's largest pet adoption event, coming up a little bit later in the month. Saturday, September 25th at the University of South Florida, Sundome Arena, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. They expect over 1,000 animals will be available for adoption that day. So, again, very reasonable price for admission, equally reasonable price for parking, and that's put on by Animal-Based Charities. Find out more their website, animalbasedcharities.org. And let's quickly also slip in one more. The Humane Society of Tampa Bay, teaming with Hillsborough County Animal Service and others, have kind of a neat deal where if you adopt an adult cat from those places, they will provide you free shots for that cat for life. Pretty nifty. All right, let's step in now to the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy, of course. This is Jackie Cation with part of a piece called Animals on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
And, but get this, when I was a kid, of course, if you had an old dog or a very ill cat, you sadly put the dog down, put the cat to sleep. It was very sad. But they would go to Happy Dog or Cat Heaven, and you would go to the pound to get a new... And it's a circle of life. It was very beautiful. That doesn't happen in crazy Los Angeles land, where people are like, oh no, the cat's only 17, we're going to get dialysis. Are ya? I have a friend of mine who has a cat that is 21 years old, and in addition to the plethora of other issues going on with this cat, it now has diabetes. And so she has to shoot it up twice a day. You know what that is? Time for a new cat. New cat twice a day? Why do you get a cat? So you don't have to do anything. That's why you get a cat. Because it poops in a box. $3,000 for diabetic cat medicine for this cat. You know what that is? That is 3,000 new cats. Because cats are free. And I have another friend of mine who has a dog, and the dog has to get a new hip, but it didn't work. And so the dog is still scooting around on a cart like Captain Pike. And I'm going to tell you something. It is a dog. It is not ever going to be Stephen Hawking. Not ever. It's not going to write the great American novel from the cart. It's not going to cure cancer from the cart. If it can't run, new dog. New dog! And people get mad at me in L.A., and they come up to me after shows, and they're like, you don't like animals. And I said, no, I don't like you. Because you're a jackass about your pet. You got to let go, weirdo. And because what do you get with a cat or a dog? 15, 20 years. That's what you get. I didn't make that rule. If you would like more than that, turtle, 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 turtle. Tiny turtle, hat, tutu, carried around your creepy Paris Hilton purse. You can lift its head up. Adorable. Giant tortoise that could walk slowly around your backyard for 300 years and become a burden on your descendants. Turtle.
Where all right. Turtle. 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 That was Jackie Cation with part of a piece called Animals, taken from her album It Is Never Going to Be Bred. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts and past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. Like us already, will ya? And to our Twitter page as well. Please follow us. Plus, there's a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to hear from today's guest, Alec Baldwin. So let me outline a few things about him. Though I suspect he doesn't need much introduction, as I mentioned earlier in the show. He is, of course, the Tony-nominated, Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning star of 30 Rock and frequent guest of Saturday Night Live. He is also a regular blogger and Huffington Post, an author, a man with deep political interests, and a spokesman for an array of causes, an educator on a variety of levels, and a veteran animal rights advocate. So, in a conversation recorded recently, an interview pursued off and on for about 5 years, which he alludes to at the beginning here, this is Alec Baldwin on Talking Animals.
Let's welcome now to Talking Animals, Alec Baldwin. Alec, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
My pleasure. Thank you. I know it took us a long time to get this together, so...
Well, no, but I'm just so delighted you made the time, and you know, I know you've also explained this more than a few times over the years, but for the benefit of our listeners who may not have heard it, I'm hoping maybe I can ask you to just recount your path into animal advocacy, how you sort of got interested and got started.
Well, I think I went to a dinner once many years ago in Las Vegas at the home of Jane Greenspun. And Jane, whose family are, the Greenspun family, are a big media family who own the Las Vegas newspaper and the major newspaper and other media outlets there. Jane is a big animal rights supporter and has been for years. And Jane Greenspun hosted a dinner there years ago. And her husband, who's from Texas, ironically, and grew up... He had a very funny line. He said, where I grew up, he said, we used to barbecue the whole herd and throw away half.
Wow.
And he grew up in a very, very traditional Texas meat-eating background and cattle ranching background. And he was a vegetarian. And we looked around the table and we realized that many of the men in the room, they're if not outright vegetarianism, then some... discipline, if you will, in the animal rights movement. They came to that through their relationship with the woman in their lives. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and my ex-wife, I mean, I'm not any less so. My ex-wife was someone who was a very committed animal rights person. She introduced me to PETA. She introduced me to Alex Pacheco and Ingrid Newkirk back then in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
This is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was introduced to it by Kim, and then just took it from there, and it evolved into this network of meeting more and more people. It went on to meeting, you know, people at HSUS, Patricia Regan, and Pat Derby and Ed Stewart at the Performing Animal Welfare Society.
Sure.
Neil Barnard, who I just attended a cocktail event for him here on Long Island for PCRM. It just kind of grew and grew.
Yeah, well, just to back it up a little bit, Alec, if we could, I mean, so when you first got exposed to some of that information, I mean, did you just sort of say, oh, well, I want to learn more, or did you just sort of jump right in and say, well, you know, how can I help, or what can I do as I do learn more?
Well, I mean, I think that the all these organizations, they're most naked, program, their most naked gambit that they play involves celebrity activism, if you will, in order to attract the press.
Yeah.
But it's an unfortunate thing that if someone who is as accomplished as someone like Pat Derby, or someone who's as dedicated as her, someone who's as smart and informed as Neil Barnard, if they stand up on their own and do a press event about abused circus animals, or Neil would talk about childhood obesity statistics, that them standing there alone might not draw the press attention that they want. I mean, that's an unfortunate reality.
Sure.
So where you work with them and you do the, you know, you fulfill that celebrity component for them, I don't mind doing that. It's unfortunate that it has to be that way, but I don't mind doing that for them if it's going to result in something good. Like this year, I'm going to host PETA's gala in Los Angeles in September.
Wow.
Yeah, they're having their first gala there in a few years. They used to do it like every other year for a while.
Yeah, it seemed like that had sort of dropped off, so that's a great way to sort of come back. And this sort of dovetails with kind of a broader observation, I guess, I have. I mean, there's sort of two main reasons I've been, you know, seeking this interview with you, and as you noted, I've been, you know, seeking it for a while. But, you know, cutting the crap, obviously, one, of course, is that you're Alec Baldwin. But related to that is what you've done over the years with your Alec Baldwin-ness. It's just a lot more interesting, than just a guy using, you know, stardom as a platform for a pet cause, so to speak. I mean, my theory is that among the many hats you wear, you're sort of at your core, genetically and otherwise, an educator. So, like, when you talk about the value of standing alongside Neil Barnard or Pat Derby, I mean, there is that, but, I mean, it seems more than that. It seems like you're someone who really is looking to inform and enlighten, whether it's helping them post pieces or speaking out against a kind of legislation or for it, or, you know, getting people to read the newspaper or writing a book. I mean, it seems like that's like a drive of yours. Is that, even more overtly, the way you interact with students when you're on, you know, inside the actor's studio, that's even classically, but I mean, like, that's a real teacher's kind of gift and passion, it seems.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of years have gone by since I first started doing this kind of stuff, and it certainly has evolved where there's groups you're involved with, and there's a way that you're involved with them, and there's a way that you handle those activities that, for me, has certainly gotten, you know, a lot more complicated over the last 25 years or so, and eventually you wind up, or if you are someone that will show up, if you are someone who is active in this way.
Yeah.
You kind of set yourself up in a way, I have discovered, where you kind of set yourself up in a way where people think of you more as a congressman than an actor, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's no shortage of people who are calling my office and reaching out to us for me to come and do something to help them in some kind of cause. And of course, you can't help everyone. You can't do everything. But so I try to pick the ones. So I think that those groups are, I mean, aside from the fact that their mission is of interest to me, that I think that they're effective, because a lot of times people will say, and also that there is a strictly not-for-profit component. I have people, for example, call me all the time and say, I've written a book, and I want you to write a foreword to my book. And I'll say, well, our proceeds from the book going to go to a charity? And they'll say, no. And I'll say, well, then I probably won't do the foreword to your book because, I mean, it's otherwise you could be just doing this stuff all day long. You know?
Sure, sure.
The groups that I have, the groups that I have stuck with, let's face it, it's about relationships with individual people that you admire and that you think are effective. I mean, two that come to mind are, in the entire time I've had a relationship with PETA, Ingrid Newkirk has run PETA. She founded PETA.
Yeah.
And she's still there. Pacheco left eventually, but she's still there. And that relationship with Ingrid, who I think I don't always agree with everything that PETA does. I don't always agree with everything that Ingrid proposes. But I might not be as hardcore as Ingrid is about some things. But I'm glad Ingrid's there, and I'm glad that she's still running PETA. Another example is a group like the Coalition for the Homeless in New York City. It's the homeless organization I support and work with. And there's a woman who's run that place her entire adult career, Mary Brosnahan, who's this incredible woman. I mean, she's run Coalition for the Homeless for 20 years, ever since I've known them. Since she was a very young woman, she's been with them ever since. And there's something about that, of someone who's stuck with a group like that those many years, that's very, very attractive to me.
So that's part of when you're trying to sort of winnow through the just barrage of requests that come into the office. One of the things it sounds like that you're looking for is, or that you would respond to over time, is stability of leadership, and as part of that, a relationship that spans.
Well, I'm just saying it doesn't have to be that way, because that seems to be less likely. I mean, people are going to move on and change jobs.
Sure.
And in the not-for-profit world, where they can't afford typically to hold on to people by bribing them, you know.
Yeah.
If you think somebody's great in their job and you want them to stay in their job at the Ford Motor Company, you can just pay them more money.
Right.
In the not-for-profit world, that's not always the case. But where there has been that stability and that consistency, I think it's resulted in great things because the people that have stayed are great people.
Sure.
I've had the good fortune to work long term with some people that I really, really like a lot.
Yeah. Well, let me let just folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tune in, I'm speaking with Alec Baldwin in a conversation that was recorded recently. So I know, Alec, at the culmination of one campaign or another, perhaps most recently the undercover investigation of Conklin Farm, you know, you've said or you'll write on Huffington Post that such campaigns underscore the value and courage of the animal rights movement. At this point, sort of late in the summer of 2010, what is your view of the movement overall and some of the pivotal organizations? I mean, you've mentioned PETA, so I'd just be curious, and you said you don't necessarily always agree with some of Ingrid's campaigns or decisions. If you were in a leadership role at let's say, PETA, since it is high profile and you have been identified there for some years, I mean, are there some ways you might recalibrate the agenda or just, you know, do or not do certain campaigns the way they're doing them, or you know, what areas would you personally emphasize maybe more or pour more resources into?
Well, the issue in the animal rights movement is always that the some of the biggest issues that you face, you can't change legislation to a degree. You can't. I mean, in some ways you can, but you can't change the law. You can't make eating meat illegal. You can't make wearing fur illegal. You can't make going to marine parks and zoos and circuses illegal.
Yeah.
You know, all you can do is try to influence people and try to say, you know, you have the legal right to do all these things, but here's why we think you should, you know, eat no meat or less meat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm certainly someone who I mean, there are people who are very unequivocal and they say, eat no meat. And I say, you know, in a world in which on a dietary level, you could live a healthy life and eat no meat and have access to nutritious food that you want.
And I think we have sort of a shared passion and concern for those animals. I mean, what is your view or your feeling on the issue of elephants in captivity, let's say specifically elephants in zoos and circuses?
I don't think I understand the question.
Well, do you have a particular feeling about the idea of elephants either being, you know, housed in zoos, exhibited in zoos, or, you know, made to sort of perform?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm there's a line that was lent to me very early on in the whole my whole education about elephants and performance, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and that is that elephants don't come out of the womb with a top hat in one hand and a cane in the other.
Right.
You know, these are animals that do not have any inclination or propensity to do this at all. They have to be trained to do that, and that training involves brutal beatings sometimes, very often, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Those people that tell you that they get these animals to do these things that they're doing as a result of some, you know, magical skills the trainers have, that's preposterous.
Of course, of course. You know, and it does seem like that's one of those areas where, and actually I keep thinking, maybe naively, that if a variety of sort of influential showbiz folks banded together, either for a series of high-profile, you know, PSA spots or even a film, it just might make a dent in the machinery, the mighty machinery of the Ringling Brothers juggernaut, because I think a lot of people, when they do understand what's involved, then they step away. Sometimes even as they're walking up to the arena with tickets in hand, when they're informed what happens. But Kenneth Feld and company are pretty savvy.
I think, but this is something where you're going to, let's face it, the majority of people are going to go and see any kind of programming, and they really don't want to know what's behind that.
Yeah.
They don't want to know, how the sausage is made, so to speak, and that's human nature.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to, in the movie business and, you know, whatever the case may be. And nothing is that more vivid than in the animal rights movement, where you see in circuses and everything what's done to animals. Not all the time. I mean, to label every trainer, and it's essential that you say this on the air, to label every trainer as some barbarian who's torturing animals, that some of them do turn out to be very kind and loving people in terms of the way they treat animals.
Sure.
But enough of them aren't. And what you wind up doing is, in all these areas, you're performing the most basic, and in a way, it's frustrating because it's the most hopeful function. You have a very hopeful approach to what you do, and that is, it's pure education.
Sure.
We can't go, and we can make abusing animals illegal, but you got to catch people, like any law. There's a lot of laws out there now.
Yeah.
That protect clean water. There's a lot of laws out there in the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, and those get broken every day.
Sure, it's how you enforce it. And, yeah.
Well, but the government doesn't have the time or the money to enforce all those things.
Right.
But and the same is true in animal protection. What you do is you wind up... And this is very difficult for people in the movement, I think, or in these organizations. But they're vigilant because you just keep saying the same thing over and over again to another generation and
yeah.
another generation. And with many of them, it's going to stick. And they don't want to eat certain kinds of food, and they don't want to have certain kinds of programming or wear certain kinds of products and so forth. And you wind up creating in a generation of people, not a majority of that generation, shall we say, but you wind up creating in an interesting number of people a sensitivity, and they turn around and that guides them throughout their life, and they'll turn around and they'll say to you, you know something, the beginning of that kind of consciousness for me came with reading a magazine from PETA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in other words, it all starts somewhere.
Right.
And even though the number of people in our society that are going to behave that way and change their behavior is modest, it is modest.
Well, but,
even though it is modest, those that we do succeed in influencing them, this is how it works. They'll turn around one day and they'll say, you know, I went to a program and I heard Howard Lyman talk about beef production.
Sure. Well, this is extremely hopeful in that way you were describing it, and then some, because I know we're sort of in the last moment or so here. I know you've got to run here. But when it comes to factory farming, for example, I mean, we touched on the undercover investigation of Conklin Farm, and horrifying video footage surfaced, as it periodically does. There's outcry, calls for tighter regulations, new legislation. You know, the already converted voice their outrage, but I'm not sure generally how much change it actually brings to the lives of John and Jane Q. Public. But what you're saying is that gradually, incrementally, that is happening, because I still see that intellectual disconnect. Sometimes, oddly, it's most pronounced amongst people who consider themselves big animal lovers, with a house full of cats and dogs, and then, you know, having a steak for dinner or a burger at lunch or whatever.
This is an enormous chasm for people, even in the animal rights movement, where we've been raised now in a society where we have we're rapidly approaching a very two-tier system of nutrition in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We're very rapidly approaching an abjectly two-tier system where there are people who can afford to buy food and have the time to prepare food,
yeah,
or sit in an expensive restaurant and have someone else prepare food for them. The amount of money that people who are high income people, the amount of money they're actually spending on food has become incredible. I mean,
yeah,
going to Whole Foods Market and buying very expensive groceries and things like this,
sure,
because they can afford to eat something that is purportedly healthful and flavorful, and it satisfies them, and it's a meal that they enjoy. And then everybody else is eating what they can afford. They're going to,
sure,
go eat, you know, boxed macaroni and cheese. They're going to eat bologna and hot dogs and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're eating what they can afford, and that's a big issue right now. Is I'm sure there are people who would love to eat a healthier diet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are people who would love, but they can't get their hands on that food. They don't have the money.
Right, right. They're just trying to keep the bills
paid.
That's
going to become, by the way, a very important looming issue, because the more and more we make healthy food unavailable to a growing amount of the population, the more and more we consign people in our society to a fate in which, because of their income, they have to eat a certain amount of food, which is processed food that is not healthy for them. Then we have to turn around as a society and we have to treat them medically for the results of that.
Right.
We're going to be given the bill for that 20, 30 years down the road, because those people are going to be sick.
Right.
And we're going to have to pay to take care of them.
Sure. So if you look at it in a bigger picture, the dollars, you know, one way or another, there's ways to sort of reconfigure those. But meanwhile, like you say, at the day-to-day level, a lot of those people, hey, they're just trying to, like, keep afloat. And if they have to grab, a boxed thing or a burger on the fly, that's maybe all they can do.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with me. I got to run. It was really great.
All right, Al. Well, thank you so much.
And I wish you the best of luck with the program and with everything you're doing. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
And to your listeners
as well.
Really
appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Talking Animal. Bye-bye.
And then he was off. Our thanks to Alec Baldwin. And so, anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals.
Alec Baldwin.
And it's time to play Name That Animal Tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of the new Jenny and Johnny CD, which features Jenny Lewis and a couple of animal tunes. We'll give that to the first person who calls on 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. There's conceivably two animal tune answers here. We'll accept either. We just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month. So ordinarily, we'd return Wednesday, October 6th, but the program will be preempted that day for WMNF's Fall Fun Drive. I hope you support us then and tune in the following Wednesday, October 13th, for a new edition of Talking Animals. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. And let's see, let's get some folks. Hi, you're on WMNF on the air. Do you know the answer? Name that animal tune.
The flight of the bumblebee, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, well, that's one, and of course it's also the theme song from the Green Hornet. So you are a winner, sir. Let me get your name right now, and we'll come back and get your info. What's your first name?
It's Greg, G-R-E-G.
Okay, Greg, I'll put you back on hold. Congratulations, we'll get your info in one sec. Okay, it was. Yeah, Flight of the Bumblebee, the Green Hornet theme. Anyways, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is new music from the Eels with I'm a Hummingbird on WMNF Tampa. Thanks for listening. Take care.
The old oak tree had roots so far down in the ground. I fell from it and hit the dirt without a sound. I dreamt at night of growing wings so I could fly. a caterpillar to a moth before I die. I plodded through ordinarily earthbound. I knew my feet could never leave the ground. I went about my way unsteady and afraid. How could I know I was headed for this day? All the seconds and the minutes and the hours and the days and the weeks and the months and the years of my life. It was all worth it to be here now. I'm a hummingbird floating tree to tree. I'm a hummingbird, beautiful and free. The old oak tree was dead, I had to cut it down. The sapling roots are new and sprouting through the ground. New worlds were taking shape, unseen and unknown. A branch to rest upon, a place to call my home.